The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, joining me now for this week's Friday Forum, Marion Harkin, Independent TD for Sligo Leitrim, Shane Castles, Meath Fianna Fáil Senator, and Quisha Connolly from our own newsroom. Good morning and welcome to you all.
Good morning.
I thought we might start with the celebration during the week for our returning Olympians and the observations by Gary Gannon, who said, Don't do any more of this because the place is unsafe. Now, he did go on to say that it was badly organised, that everything started an hour late, which leads to its own problems. What say you, Quisha?
I think I definitely disagree that I think they should still go ahead, that especially like given just separately, obviously the Olympic team did so well. I think you have to kind of recognise it and really everyone was on board. I don't think there's anyone against having a celebration.
No, I mean, the idea is right and proper. But when you bring people into a city that is dirty, unsafe, open drug dealing, what then?
I think really the event went off quite smoothly. I know there was that stabbing nearby, but I think not, I don't know, maybe that stabbing might have happened regardless of what was going on at the same time, coincidentally. But I think like any capital city, there are places that you feel more safe. There are places that you feel, you know, you wouldn't walk down there on your own necessarily on a...
Well, we all work in the centre of town. Yeah. It's often very grubby.
Yeah, a power wash wouldn't go astray.
On everything. Marion.
Well, look, I suppose what people are concerned about is the randomness, that you're walking down the street and something had happened. And just by chance this week, Pat, I'm in Dublin for the week because I want to try and deal with the pile that was left in Leinster House. So on Tuesday evening and yesterday evening, I left Leinster House around 6:30 and I took the Lewis in just to O'Connell Street, Henry Street, walked around in and out of shops. And I paid particular attention and in both evenings, it was only for 2 hours, I never once saw a guard on Henry Street, O'Connell Street, wherever I was travelling. Now, it was only between, you know, that part of Dublin and Leinster House. And it was only just me looking around.
But did
around.
You feel unsafe in any way?
No. To be fair, I didn't. I felt it was a lovely evening. People were out. There were people, for example, a food programme at the front of the GPO, people queuing. But no, at no point did I feel unsafe. But equally, I know that if I saw one or two guards, it would make a difference. And I suppose for me, I spoke to somebody who's in and out of the city all the time. And the comment this person made to me, he's a young man, and he said, if my mother was coming to Dublin, I would tell her not to go to the city centre, not to, etc. And to me, that sort of says it all. I didn't feel unsafe, but equally, I just felt if there was more of a presence of Gardaí, it would have made a real difference. Yeah.
Dark in the evening and throw in a shower or two of rain and the atmosphere changes
dramatically.
Because loads of people actually add a sense of protection. Because when there's loads of people passing by and bustling on the pavements, you definitely feel safer. Shame.
Absolutely, and that's the very point. And I think, you know, I often caution against politicians making broad brushstroke statements in terms of saying no more public events. Gary Gannon is entitled as a TD to make a comment about Dublin if he says, you know, there's an issue in terms of policing, but then call out and say no public events. During the four weekends in July, there was literally hundreds of thousands of people attending the four finals in Croke Park. And then before and after, and I was there for all four, coming in and after around O'Connell Street. No issues. There'll be 80,000 this weekend at ACDC. Should we cancel ACDC because of one event? No.
There'll also be hundreds of guards on overtime, as you know.
There will, but in general, when you say literally hundreds of thousands of people during those weekends in July and there was no issue, what also gets my goat about this is, okay, so the incident took place on Marlborough Street, but then categorising that entire part of Dublin as unsafe, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. I'd know that area extremely well. Okay, I'd probably know better, and most kind of country lads would actually know that part of town because they're accessing public transport home from Store Street or Amien Street. Marlborough Street has a special feel all unto itself. And there's a great local community down there. You go down, pop into Briody's Pub or whatever, and you find that the locals that are down there, it's a good area. And for people then to categorise the entirety of that area as unsafe is wrong. Is there a different vibe if you're walking down Talbot Street than walking down Café Enseigne on Dawson Street? Yes, there is. But that doesn't mean that it's unsafe. And how you tackle that is not just by more guards, it's by instigating things on the north side. Such, for example, putting the portal on Earl Street was a really good thing. You could have stuck it up on Stephen's Green, but they didn't. They stuck it on Earl Street. Mm. It's bringing families down there and it's changing the dynamic of the area. Cleary's reopening and having such a great grand store again on O'Connell Street changes the dynamic of the city centre. You know, the city centre is owned by the people that occupy it. And I do not say that I feel unsafe. As I said, I'm on that street every single day of the week.
You're coming in at about 6 foot two, are you? About that, yeah.
I am, Pat. But there's,
I can tell you,
there's plenty of lads, okay, that have suffered assaults, whether they be 6 foot two or 4 foot nothing. My point is in terms of it's not just about policing; it is investing in the area, and that's why I go back to making sure that that vibe that I talked about, that it's not one of negativity and people feel unsafe. Sure. And that self-fulfilling prophecy and guys making statements might be just cool the jets and think about the impact on their areas as well.
Yeah, it's funny though. My sense of that the city is kind of grubby and not well maintained and, you know, plastic bollards everywhere and inaccessible places and little islands inserted into pavements for cafes and so on, trying to replicate cafe society. And then you see the Paris on the telly and you think, come on, we can do better than that. You know,
yeah,
Paris makes us feel ashamed of the state of maintenance of our city.
I think you're right around the maintenance aspect. Now, again, I want to be very clear. At no time did I personally feel unsafe. But just there is a certain element of a bit of grubbiness. And I think what Shane said is absolutely right. Where the portal is, families are more likely to go there. Cleary's opening, more people around. All of that gives you a sense of this is our city. Mm. This is our capital city. And but equally, Shane, the presence of Gardaí is crucial. They don't have to be everywhere, but you have to have a sense that if you turn the corner or if you go into this street or the next street or the parallel street, there will be some Gardaí walking
Absolutely.
Around.
And, but
and
Marian,
just that aspect of it.
Also, there's a role for the Dublin City Council to play here. And they actually are, in fairness to them as well. So when you go up Gardiner Street, maybe a long forgotten street and a lot of people wouldn't, but I'll be up there regularly. They've put in a new whole park area there up around the student accommodation at the top of Gardiner Street. Signs on it, respect this park. It is being respected. It's open nearly a year now. People are respecting it. It's bringing families back in there as well. Work done in Mountjoy Square as well. So yeah, by investing in the public
space. I was dropping someone off at the student accommodation there on Gardiner Street. And at the next corner, which was the junction with Sean McDermott Street, I saw someone flogging drugs. Openly, not a problem.
I don't dispute what you saw, Pat. You could see that on the fanciest streets in South Dublin as well. My point being is that that continued investment that I'm speaking about is the kind of thing that will change the dial. Of course we want to see that presence. And after the riots last year and the build-up around Christmas, we saw the impact of housing the response unit on the middle of O'Connell Street, by having more presence. It did give that sense. People were looking for that at that stage. By the way, we need that outside of Dublin as well. You know, I've been calling for that in my own constituency, my own town in Navan as well, in terms of the per capita for guards as well. So it's not just a Dublin issue, but there's many agencies that play a part here.
Now, what about the smell of weed everywhere in the city, in the South City as well as the North City? You suspect that if someone was observed smoking dope, that the guards would not intervene.
There's also, as kind of picking up from what you were saying about the open drug dealing, like Aston Quay there. I don't know how the people and like around. Now I'm a Dub. I love Dublin, and I would obviously, as I was saying, I would avoid certain parts.
Yeah.
But O'Connell Street, like, there are people, but you kind of just like you have your head screwed on, and you just keep walking. Do you know what I mean? You wouldn't
engage.
Yeah, you wouldn't like. Do you know that way? You just don't want to get yourself in trouble. But yeah, maybe it's just that they know that there's no guards around, so they don't. Like, would someone put a joint out if they saw a guard coming down the street? Like, what can the guards do? Like, search them or...
Yeah, we had a comment about Stephen's Green on a sunny day.
Yeah.
Walking through Stephen's Green and at every bench, basically, people smoking dope.
You feel it, yeah. And you're kind of like, sometimes someone might get on a bus and there'd be a smell and you're like, God, like, it really, like, it's very strong, obviously.
What do you do, though? I mean, if that's where we're at now.
Well, I think the kind of just kind of going on to a tangent about drugs, obviously there was the Citizens Assembly and they were saying about, like, you know, having a medical response. So I think maybe cannabis, that sort of drug use, like the whole CBD, maybe is it becoming a little bit more socially acceptable that because of that kind of thing? So maybe, like, I don't think in any way people take drugs very seriously, or I mean cannabis very seriously, but maybe is it because of that kind of global conversation about...
Now, we had a conversation earlier on the programme about young people and a surge in mental health difficulties globally. And we were talking about mobile phones and how they may have contributed. I'll read some of the comments. Societal change has enabled children's access to the world of technology through technology, while simultaneously infantilizing them by overprotective parenting into their late teens and preventing them from growing through incremental responsibilities. I think it's very strange, says another, that a child can't go to the GP without a parent or the parent's consent, but they can go into a phone shop at any stage and buy a phone where they're subjected to all sorts of terrible stuff. Adults need to act like adults here. It's obvious that phones and social media are damaging young kids. Stop wringing your hands and get governments to act quickly. Lost generations are the future if kids aren't looked after today. What say you, Marilyn?
Yes, I agree. And I think there is a real responsibility on government to do this, to regulate social media. It's the algorithms. It's where people's feed, your whatever you're on, whether it's Twitter or whatever, that you're driven in a certain direction. That just impacts on your mind. It doesn't matter what age you are, whether you're 10 or you're 80. And it's that needs to be dealt with. And I know the Taoiseach is speaking about it, and maybe it's not that straightforward, but I do think the most recent legislation from Europe can assist us in that way, that people have to actually opt into having those algorithms on their feed. In other words, that it's not just it's there and you don't know it. You actually have to accept it.
And we all do. We all just click accept.
Yeah, just yes, because you're too busy to read the
terms and conditions, etc. Do you accept? Click.
Yeah, but I think the new legislation, and it's in its infancy, I think will help us to deal with that, to manage it. And I think your listener who texted in and who said that, the parent can't go to a GP with, I'm not sure what age of a teenager, but yet that person can access the whole wide world, all that's good and bad in it, on their mobile phone. There's something really wrong there.
Yeah, I mean, this is obviously something we've dealt with a lot at the Oireachtas Media Committee. But the first and foremost point is no child ends up with a phone in their hand other than their parent buys it for them. And I'm saying that as a parent of three kids, 15, 14 and 10. And the two older ones do have phones. And, it's up to ourselves as parents then to make sure that they're using them correctly and properly. There's no point getting into a nanny state either on those issues. Like my 15-year-old, she's 15 tomorrow, and there's no way she wouldn't accept having her phone to be able to chat to her friends. It's my job as a parent then to make sure she gets the balance right with her physical activity, with her study, and in terms of thinking that the state can do the parenting for me. They can't.
Do you have rules, though, about, does your child take the phone to bed?
Does she have it in her room? Yes, she does. And I have that level of trust with her. And I have a good relationship with my daughter to make sure that, she...
Aren't you an awful Egypt then? If that's what our listeners are saying. I'm not really saying it about you, but I'm reflecting what is going through. He is being codded up to the eyeballs, is what they're all saying.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. And many parents might feel the same in terms of their own thinking, having that trusting relationship, there's no problem. You then get into a whole area then in terms of the age verifications that we've been calling for in respect of particular sites and accessing particular sites. And that will be part of the online safety codes by the end of the year. And the fines attributed to breaches of that is running somewhere in the region of 20 million. So there is going to be, from a government side, significant legislation. But as I go back to the point, the government can't parent for me. That's my job, and making sure that have that level of trust.
I think in the report, they were talking a lot about the pandemic as well. And I think, again, as Marion was kind of saying, it doesn't matter what age you are, like people of all ages would have suffered mentally. And because you're online too, like we were probably all online too much, screen time and everything. So I think maybe like it's kind of almost like you have to go back to basics, that it's so easy, like you've got unlimited data. Do you know what I mean? Like you don't have, it's not like back in the day when you had your dial up and you were like counting every second. So I think it's that, It is like the new smoking, really, using your phone. But children, like the social skills of being out of school and lockdowns, and even again, I would have felt social anxiety coming out of lockdown because I'm like, oh, there's people there. I think it's just really hammered home the the importance of being able to speak face to face to people.
Right. But I think Pat was crucial. It's not just so much the unlimited data, though I agree with you. It's where the different media platforms are driving our information, where what's coming to us on our screens. We do not have control over that. It's not random. It is driven in a certain way. And that's where governments need to step in. I personally do not see that as the nanny state.
No.
And I don't think
well,
you
I've
do
actually I. made a call for that actually only a week and a yeah. half ago, Marion, in respect of this online safety code, that those actual things be actually turned off as a prerequisite. And then to access those so that if whatever you're into, Pat, whether it be sport or knitting or whatever, that then you actually turn that on to be able to receive that feed as your preferred settings.
Yes, I agree with that. But we need strong government action on it because, as Pat
Fisher,
said...
Do you see that as a possibility that before... In other words, you have to switch on the algorithm.
It's a really
it's
funny...
It's not the way they work, you know?
Yeah, and it's funny as well because then you'd get the likes of, like, I don't know... Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg being like freedom of speech that like you can't, do you know what I mean? If people, if
no,
there's...
But the algorithm pushes choice. Something at you, mm-hmm. something you did not
that's
request.
Yeah.
And
if
that's
you,
the difference. Yeah. If I Google, I enter yeah. Creature Connolly and I get everything about you, that's fine.
Yeah.
I've requested
you
that.
Want that yeah.
But if the algorithm on TikTok or wherever is pushing stuff at you that you did not request, is there the possibility that you could on all of these social media sites have this permission? In other words, switch yeah. on, switch off the algorithm.
Yeah, but it's still even like I like whenever you look at stuff, if you start looking at knitting or something, you'll just get a load of knitting. Do you know what I mean? They'll do that. But then there's the whole, again, it goes down the rabbit hole of the far right that, and some people are looking like they're curious, like, oh, what is that conspiracy theory? And then they just end, like, it's the genie is out of the bottle. Do you
yeah,
know that way?
It's not so much that you can't check stuff out. It's that you're not driven in that direction all the time and that somebody's, so not somebody, because no one person could,
yeah.
yes, could manage this. And I think that's where the state steps in. I agree with Shane. After that, there are other levels of whether it's parenting or whatever. Mm.
I want to
education.
Read you some of the comments coming in. Just back from Prague, very clean, lots of street cleaners, possibly community service was the impression I got. So perhaps killing two birds with one stone. Empty the prisons and have community service on the streets keeping the place tidy. I've been operating a business in Dublin too for 10 years. While I never feel unsafe, I've never seen the streets as grubby and filthy as they are these days. Vacant buildings boarded up everywhere, people sleeping rough on doorsteps everywhere you look. It's heartbreaking and demoralising as a business owner. Your speaker is correct. If you talk of an area being unsafe, it puts good law-abiding citizens off using the area. Women in particular feel unsafe and avoid those areas. When the area becomes unsafe, there are fewer people about. And I'm yeah. speaking as a 5'4" woman. That's from Mary. Shane Castles, like all incumbent politicians, refuses to call out the urban death spiral that Dublin is in. I work in the city in the IFSC. Dublin is a dive. Sorry. No Gardaí, open drug taking, antisocial behaviour. When are the politicians going to listen to ordinary Dubliners who would like their city back? That's from Michelle. I'm from inner city Dublin. I know you need to have your wits about you going up Talbot Street. You don't feel safe. And I don't go into town as much as I used to. And I live in Dublin too. Your guests have no clue what the back streets of Dublin are like after dark. I guarantee not one of them would walk around Marlborough Street or the back lanes around Talbot Street or around Capel Street on their own. I've had to do call-outs in these areas, and I'm not a small fella, but I can tell you these are no-go areas. I've never seen a guard around these areas at night or indeed during the day. I've just returned from Frankfurt, not the most beautiful city. It's full of addicts and hookers and beggars around the station district, but you never feel unsafe there because police on every street corner, any hassle, they react immediately. The problem with Dublin is an insufficient police presence. A friend of mine who's a business near the river in Dublin 1, it's worse than ever this summer. We're completely on our own. Garda stations, phones not even being answered. It's a free-for-all about antisocial behaviour. Our safety and lives are being threatened. What a way to run a city. It's a complete dereliction of duty by the authorities. Wake up, social representatives. Take the city back. So.
That's pretty shocking, Pat. And that's coming from listeners, people who live in the city, people who do business in the city. Now, in truth, I wouldn't like to walk around the back streets of any town.
New York or London, you're not going to be... coming out of a pub at 12 o'clock at night.
But equally, yeah. those people are telling it as they see it and as it is for them. And I think if there's one thread running through all of that, and it's not a panacea, but there is one thread, the presence of Gardaí really makes a significant difference.
Shane, just I mean, the message, you don't seem to be getting the message from our listeners, from ordinary Dubliners, the place is a dive, sort it out.
Yeah, well, Dublin's not a dive. And quite frankly, you know, when international, you know, walking across here, the amount of American tourists coming here, enjoying this city, German tourists, people still enjoy this city. And I go back to that point in terms of people calling Dublin dive, it's not a dive. And in terms of that comment, take the city back. How is that being done? It's being done because people still believe it. Private investors like the Cleary's redevelopment, like people coming and investing in the middle of Dublin, like the GPO reinvestment. People do believe in Dublin. O'Connell Street in itself, you walk down there, people saying it's not safe. It is one of the grand vistas still in European architectures and European cities. And I fully believe that. What is important is that the public investment continues from Dublin City Council, making sure that on Garda Síochána O'Connell replicate the presence they had last Christmas, and that people do have that sense of trust and safety in the city. And the point I'm making is politicians rabbiting on broad brushstrokes that it's unsafe is unhelpful, and it's quite frankly cheap commentary in the overall debate.
Another cheap comment then from Kieran Murphy in Rathfarnham. We spent three nights in Ljubljana in Slovenia last year. The city was spotless and full of evening entertainment, with people of all ages enjoying the river amenities. A true cafe society. No antisocial behaviour or drug taking. The police were very relaxed, as there was little to worry about. So it's not only rich historic cities like Paris we should envy. Dublin is a disgrace. End of. I mean, you don't seem to be taking this in.
No, absolutely.
Shane.
My point being is that the debate, though, Pat, kind of only centres on the north side. As I said, when you have a situation where I talked about the different vibe, I said there was a different vibe between, say, the likes of Earl Street, Talbot Street, Henry Street, and you walk down the nice Dawson Street with the ivy and cafe and people having that cafe vibe that you're talking about. It's making sure that you're replicating that, and that could be only done through a combination of actually investing in the city, speaking up for it, and making sure that those who have private capital actually invest in the north side just as equally as they do on the south side, and creating that balance. I think that's a very fair point. And maybe if more people did it, we would actually take back the city rather than just a cheap commentary.
Last Monday, I walked along Henry Street to Moore Street, 9 o'clock in the morning. I witnessed a drug dealer selling and stashing drugs in a stand. I walked the entire area looking for a guard to report the incident to. Sadly, none to be found. Kushik, what's your reflection on what you're hearing?
Yeah, I think, like, again, I'm a Dub. Everyone goes, I love Dublin. But they're definitely on the north side, I do feel there's a difference in the feeling and the vibe, as Shane was saying. But I think, again, it's the vacancy. It's even, like, if you even think of before, like, Cleary's closed and everything, like, it's definitely, and I definitely think there should be more. It's not even anecdotal. Like, there are definitely more drug dealing and on the north side. So there should be, I don't know, maybe the drug force doesn't have the resources.
I mean, your listeners are saying it. We're saying
you do see it, you have to turn a blind eye because you can't go, stop doing that. Do you mean, you can't intervene.
Yeah, but I'm not in Dublin like you are, but you're saying it. We're accepting that that's happening. I mean, this is really a Garda enforcement issue, because either we accept that it happens or we say we have to try to stop it happening. We can't be sort of in between on this. And all of the people who are texting in to you are making that comment very strongly. I mean, this idea of take the city back, I think, means make sure that whether you're 15 or 75, whether you're a man, whatever you are, that you can feel you can walk the streets of your capital city in relative safety. Nobody can guarantee it.
Berna says, just returned from Naples yesterday, stayed at Pagina di Storica. It's an area on a big street like Grafton Street, except busier. We were out until all hours. Some nights never had any trouble, never saw any trouble. And the city cleaners, like in France, were out at 4 a.m. cleaning and washing. We have a lot to do to catch up with the rest of Central Europe. That's from Bernard. Another one about here. The smell of weed on buses is absolutely disgusting, and there's no escape unless the driver gets to where the individual is who's got the smell in their clothes and can be identified and told to get off the bus. And that's very unlikely to happen. The driver will stay sequestered in their little area rather than confront someone who might do them harm.
Yeah, if there's someone smoking, and I've been on buses where up the back of the bus, there are people and you're kind of like, Janie, what year is it? Like, you can't smoke anywhere, and they're just, but obviously they don't seem to care. And again, a bus driver that they have to stop the bus and come up.
Yeah, you can't.
They're kind of defenseless.
No, yeah, that's not. Okay, well, look, that's all we've time for. We're having depressed everybody.
Oh, no,
happy
about
weekend.
The capital city. Marion Harkin, independent TD for Sligo Leitrim, Shane Castles, Meath, Fianna Fáil senator, and Quisha Connolly of News Talk. Thank you all very much. A reminder:
the Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.